From the latest technology to toys, building materials and even food, many products are in short supply around the world. So what's causing the supply crunch? And will this mean higher prices for us all? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. A supply chain crisis is threatening to derail the world's economic recovery from the pandemic. New smartphones, toys, clothes and even Christmas turkeys are among many items not reaching consumers. Analysts are blaming what they call a perfect storm of problems. Dozens of cargo ships are stuck off the coast of Southern California in the US. They're waiting to unload containers at ports in Los Angeles and Long Beach that handle almost half of America's imports. That backlog is pushing up prices. Shops are warning of empty shelves ahead of Thanksgiving and Christmas. US President Joe Biden says the ports will now work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Delivery companies and major retailers are also working overtime.
This is across-the-board commitment to going to 24/7. This is a big first step in speeding up the movement of materials and goods through our supply chain. But now we need the rest of the private sector chain to step up as well. Our goal is not only to get through this immediate bottleneck, but to address the long-standing weaknesses in our transportation supply chain that this pandemic has exposed.
The problem was the main focus of a meeting of G7 finance ministers in Washington on Wednesday. Britain's Rishi Sunak said they agreed to work constructively towards a solution. The UK's supply problems are compounded by Brexit and a shortage of truck drivers. Cargo ships have been diverted from Britain's biggest port. Container terminals in Europe are at full capacity as well.
We see this issue actually in all major European ports, but also ports across the world in the US, in China. There are disruptions because due to the pandemic, China, which is basically the factory of the world, stood still for a couple of weeks, and then they started production again. That created a backlog, that created the disruption. In the meantime, there have been other global disruptions, such as the incident in the Suez Canal, the Brexit.
And in the factory of the world, China, output has slowed down for the first time since the pandemic started. Several provinces are suffering from power cuts and electricity rationing. The price of commodities has gone up. A major index measuring the cost of goods for wholesalers rose by 10.7% last month, the fastest jump in 26 years. Let's bring in our guests in Newcastle, Jaz Khalra, Assistant Professor in Supply Chain Management at Newcastle University Business School. In Yantai, China, Dan Wang, Chief Economist at Hang Seng Bank, China. And in Plymouth, Stavros Karamperidis, Lecturer in Maritime Economics and the Head of the Maritime Transport Research Group at the University of Plymouth. Welcome to the programme. Let's begin in Newcastle first with Jaz Khalra. As I understand it, the most simple way of describing this global supply chain is the fact that it works on this kind of last-minute principle. The idea is that with frictionless borders, with all the supply chain working at once, everything gets to the shops, everything gets to the stores just in time. Nothing is stockpiled. And for decades, that system has worked for the most part. But now with the pandemic and with Brexit and with a shortage of workers, that last-minute principle is being really tested. Is it still working? Is it still the best way?
I think the whole principle of just-in-time production and delivery, it works in certain settings and it doesn't work in other settings. And it's really important to distinguish between the two. So just-in-time, of course, has good benefits in terms of there is evidence to support. It has evidence. The evidence says that it's a good quality, low-cost, low-time method of delivery. However, it also makes supply chains really vulnerable because a lot of organizations who have adopted this approach have done it to achieve the low cost, low inventory benefit. So since supply chains are vulnerable, we have little stock. When these things happen, we find that how reliant we are on our global suppliers or our global supply chains and borders aren't as frictionless as we would like it to be. So this when pandemic or any exogenous shocks occur, these vulnerabilities get exposed, and then we find out the problems that are with this system, and we need a more of a, let's say, an agile system or a hybrid system to combat this.
In Yantai, Dan Wang, is it simply then that actually we just have to deal with these problems when they occur, because they don't occur that often, and this is like a very one-off event, as it were, like the pandemic, Brexit, supply worker shortages, that kind of thing. Is it simply that this is just the cost of doing business?
I do think it has a lot to do with COVID and how different governments deal with COVID. The reason why China has a less severe problem in its domestic supply is because the government has strong control over the pandemic spread. But if you look at most governments in the world, actually, they have already become very flexible in what people can do, what workers can do, and that has disrupted a lot of the production process. And on top of that, the shipping cost has been extremely high, and it doesn't look like it will come down anytime soon. So this adds to the power shortage in China. So I think this problem will continue to at least the end of next year.
But is it simply, Dan Wang, the cost of just doing business? Like, you just have to adapt to when things like this happen?
I believe so, because an event like this is highly unpredictable. Nobody knew that there will be a supply chain disruption in this scale. And when people look at the post-COVID situation in last March, all of a sudden, every country was in a shortage of masks and medical devices. But people respond, and factories responded very differently. And we have seen that China motivated a lot of its domestic manufacturers and effectively solved this problem within 3 months. But for most economies, they do not have such industrial foundations, so they have to bear the cost of waiting and eventually import masks from countries like China. Policy uncertainties and...
Sorry, I was just going to bring your point to Stavros Karamperidis, who's in Plymouth. So is this the best? Look, this is the only system we've got. It's a system that does work. It sometimes breaks down. But is it the only system we have?
Yes, it is the only system that we have. And I think it's a very reliable system. The fact that we're seeing some kind of disruptions at the moment, it makes sense because according to the latest statistics, we have a $16 trillion of US dollars that the customers want to spend, and that kind of money has been saved during the pandemic from people not going out for eating and all the other social activities and all that kind of stuff. So people are now going out and they're spending money, craziness. We have an increase in demand of 6.5% compared to 2020, and you may think that 2020 was kind of an anomaly, which I agree with you. And then if you compare that with 2019, that is bringing the demand of 3.5%. So in 2021, we have 3.5% more demand. And at the same time, we have ports that are struggling because of COVID. We have lack of containers. We have a lot of disruptions in the overall system with lack of truck drivers in the UK, all over the globe. So that is kind of causing a small problem, which, as you said earlier on, is part of the business. You know, we really have to deal with that. And the business sector is doing that.
Jaz Kalra, the business sector is dealing with it. I mean, you look a bit sceptical there.
Yeah, I mean, because I do agree that it is once in a lifetime event. It's a big exogenous shock. Some people are even calling it a black swan event. But I'm of the opinion that we have had versions of such events, smaller scale, but we've been seeing disruptions since 2011, before even. And, you know, every time a global supply chain disruption occur, you know, we try to deal with the solution rather than thinking about more long-term solutions that we can probably implement. So, for example, one thing that I'm, particularly if we take the example of COVID, what I think is that it is a global problem. Our supply chains are global. However, COVID has forced governments to as they should at this time, to look a lot more inwards, and they are trying to deal with the COVID situation more locally. However, that is going to affect the links between these nodes. So we have to think about them, and we have to prepare for any future such events as well. So I think we need to rethink the supply chain strategy. Yes, you know, I know that, you know, people have been appointed apparently to save Christmas, but we have to think beyond that as well.
Dan Wang in China, one of the things that global governments seem to be doing is actually passing the buck. And oftentimes that buck stops with China. A lot of people are blaming China for this. They're saying, well, actually, that's where the disruption begins. And if there's disruption in China, then that affects the entire global supply chain. Is that a fair criticism, or is it just, once again, blaming the biggest country?
Because China is the biggest manufacturer in the world and also usually the largest trading partner of most countries in the world. This blame has some foundations, because right now the biggest problem for Chinese manufacturers is that they don't have the shipping capacity to send those goods out. Even if they produce enough, they're usually 1 to 2 quarters behind when they actually hold a container. So we have seen that the companies in China, in coastal regions, are declining new orders. The power shortage certainly adds to the wall of this whole misery, but the biggest bottleneck is still shipping. And Chinese companies just simply cannot guarantee the shipping delivery.
Stavros, in Plymouth, just before we came on air, my executive producer was eating a package of Oreos, and he made the point that perhaps we should be eating more locally. That one of the reasons for this is that we should be eating more locally. And I pointed out that actually the Oreos were made in America. Is this getting people to try and look at eating more food locally, using more locally manufactured goods? Is that a way around this crisis?
To be honest, I don't think so. That's a problem related with globalism at the moment. Because even if you see what is happening in the UK, for example, a lot of local producers are saying that we don't have enough manpower to slaughter some of the animals. So even if you try to eat locally, that means that we don't have enough resources at the moment. So we really have to start thinking holistically about the overall supply chain, how it's operating, and what kind of factors they're affecting it. So at the moment, you quite rightly said that COVID is affecting the supply chain. You may have heard in the news that we're having some huge hurricanes hitting China at the moment. So again, we're going to have more disruption in the Chinese ports. And at the end of the day, it's not only China. If you see US as well, we have a lot of vessels queuing out there. Europe, the same story as we've seen in the videos before. So it's a matter of making investments and trying to predict the unpredictable, because we had an economic crisis back in 2008. And as you remember, back then we recovered, we had an increased demand, we had zero problems since then. Now, yes, we have an increased demand, but because we have problems with supply, which those problems are multifactorial, it's kind of difficult to navigate through them and predict them. So I think that's the problem that we have to face, and we have to make a more resilient network.
Giles Kelra in Newcastle. Politicians are warning now that there will be shortages in the near future. Obviously, they are thinking that this is a serious problem, but I can't help but think, if you're warning about this now, then it is going to be a problem. But the basic underlying issues haven't changed. This is a long-term problem, right?
I completely agree. This is more of, in my opinion, a bit more signposting that, yes, this is going to occur. And on some level, it has triggered panic buying as well. So this problem has actually complicated a lot more, actually, by these announcements. But yeah, you're so right that this is a long-term problem. If you particularly take UK's example, COVID has only complicated the problem that was already there, which was we were entering into negotiations with the European Union, and our trade depends a lot on that. So, you know, COVID combined with Brexit has actually made it a long-term problem, and particularly for the UK, we need a long-term solution. I completely agree with Travis's point there that, you know, at the point you made earlier, that we need to think locally. And what I would like to say on that is we need to think about supply network, developing supply systems, supply chains and networks that rely on local capabilities. The problem is that a lot of organizations are so reliant on global suppliers, we don't even know what local capabilities are. And actually that might lead to changes in the types of demand. So there's a variety of demand, so types of demand patterns as well. So I think this is a long-term problem, and we need to think sustainable long-term solution. Otherwise, it will just come back again same time next year. We are already seeing panic buying. People have bought 60% to 70% more of Christmas gifts than they did last year. So what they're doing is that they're buying early. So this problem is actually going to complicate.
Dan Wang in China, listen, Is there a more esoterical way of looking at this? Are we demanding infinite growth from a planet with finite resources? And actually what we're doing is we're buying way too much, and actually there does need to be a readjustment of demand, or is growth everything?
Well, the world is suffering from consumerism. At this point, I agree with you. We probably can tolerate spending a bit less on individual basis. But when it comes to the supply chain, it is a very different situation now from 30 years ago. Countries have developed their own patterns. Countries like Britain and the U.S. have probably permanently lost their ability to develop a mid-range and lower-end supply chain of their own. And if we look at the global goods, about 80% are produced and sold locally. Only about 20% of the goods are doing international trade. They are traveling around the world. And among this 20% of global goods, it's very unlikely that any of the countries that did not have the capacity can suddenly develop the capacity. It's either because the higher land cost or higher taxes or labor cost, they just simply cannot. They have to rely on ASEAN, on China. So I think this is a new reality people have to adapt to. They can't develop or expect a parallel system. One rely on the regional supply and one rely on the global supply. It's just simply not a reality anymore.
Stavros, you're a lecturer in maritime economics and the head of the Maritime Transport Research Group. I mean, what do you think of what Dan Wang has just said?
I think there's a sense of truthness in that one. So we really have to start thinking that, okay, we haven't managed to find the X product that we're looking for, why we can't buy the Y? So we have to increase a bit or be a bit more open-minded, let's say, in the choices that we're doing as customers, because I think that will help us to navigate through that crisis, which, as I said before, is not linked with globalization. I think it's going to be overpassed quite soon from the business sector, because we have to sell goods, and that's the way to prosperity. And that's how we've managed to build up our economic models for many, many years. So I think the future is that, yes, we can buy more local stuff. Yes, we can think about the choices. But as Wang said earlier on, we really have to think a bit more holistically and try to find out better options. Let's put it that way.
Jas Kelra, if you're advising, say, the American government right now, or the British government even right now, and I understand they both have very different problems when it comes to global supply chain management, what is the first thing you're going to get, A, the Americans to fix, and B, the British to fix?
Well, on the short term, I would really like the UK government to think carefully about the relationships that we have with our European partners, and get that sorted in the right way. Because ignoring some of the crisis situation and blaming it on COVID won't help. Because yes, COVID has complicated the situation, but the problem was already there. So I think we need to, as a nation, we need to think about trade and supply chains more carefully. Develop local capabilities. Yes, we also have the challenges around the challenge that we have set for ourselves, building back better and leveling up. That's really important. So that is something that we need to continue doing, and also build relationships and get the negotiations right with our European partners on the problems that we have. With more American My advice, and I say this with a caveat because I know less about US than UK, but I think I'm very concerned about the current problem, which is the big line of the big problem that we have right now over there, where the containers are not taken off the ships. So I think we need to resolve that problem. We need to get that issue right. They are doing it in the short term. They have Walmart and they have unions for working 24/7. But how sustainable is that? So can we think beyond the short-term solutions? So we need to solve this current problem.
Dan Wang in China, if you were advising the Chinese government on a long-term solution or long-term even planning to deal with this in the future, what would you tell them?
Well, the Chinese government has already emphasized the supply side of reform, which is centering around supply chain security. And number two is food security. Number three, energy security. So my advice would be they have to adopt more market-based reform. And in a way, this power shortage and the supply chain bottleneck right now has created an opportunity. We have already seen that in the past month, Chinese government has allowed the coal power electricity price to fluctuate more or less based on market demand and supply. So they have achieved more in a month than already in the past decade. So in a way, this is a positive force.
Sorry, Dan, I'm going to get you to explain a few of those terms there just for the people who might not understand at home. When you're talking about the Chinese power crisis, you're talking about a shortage of power within China itself. So there's electricity blackouts?
Correct. So there is a power shortage, and that is because the coal price is very high, but the end electricity price cannot be fully adjusted. Only about 35% of China's traded electricity can fluctuate with market supply and demand, and the rest is fixed price. So last month, Chinese government actually allowed the electricity price that's generated, that's coming from coal power plant to fluctuate. And that is quite significant progress because there was a lot of opposition from the legacy system.
Stavros, you've heard what our other guests have had to say. Do you still think that this is probably the best system we have?
I think so. And if I had to advise any of the governments around the globe, I would say that they really have to consider supply chain more carefully. And they also have to set up risk management exercises and try to think carefully how not to convert successes. Because I think the biggest problems that we're seeing at the moment are taking place in US and the UK. And that's because those two governments have managed to roll out the vaccines quite quick or quicker than the rest of the world. And also they have managed to have to reopen the economies quicker than the rest of the world. So I think they're kind of victims of their victories because they have managed to open the economy so fast. And now they're having problems with the supply because the demand is already there, but the supply is not there to succeed the demand. So try to think about carefully when you're playing with that kind of terms, when you open the market, for example, and how the market is going to react to demands. I think it's very important for the near future.
Jaz Kalra, we are running out of time, but I just want to ask you this question. There is collateral damage when it comes to the global supply chain. It's not just the big economies in the world, China, the US, Russia, Britain, Europe, etc. There are, you know, poorer nations who suddenly can't afford to trade, suddenly can't afford to buy those goods because the price has gone up. Does that make a difference to how the supply chain works?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a big situation, particularly when you have global supply chains. And that's why there's this whole idea that we, the channel captains, essentially, the ones who are at the top of the supply chain from more prosperous nations, they need to think about their suppliers more responsibly. For example, when this COVID situation started, a lot of big textile retailers, they terminated their contracts with the garment manufacturing factories in Bangladesh, and it had such a severe impact that it was that the whole industry was at the brink of the collapse. So we need to think about that more carefully. That why are we sourcing it from that country, and if we are sourcing from that supply chains, we need to think of those suppliers not just as a cost reduction mechanisms, but also as so that they are able to build a sustainable growth over the years as suppliers.
I want to thank all our guests, Jaz Kalra, Dan Wang and Stavros Karamperidis. And I want to thank you two for watching. Now, you can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.